Dear friends, preachers, why do you preach? What is your deepest motive? If our motive for preaching in any degree involves personal gain, financial, or ego, we disqualify ourselves from preaching. In our study passage, Paul rejoiced that his reward for preaching was that he was blessed to preach. Even if he had to preach with no expectation of financial support for that preaching. As I wrote this week's gleanings, I took time to reflect on some 66 years of preaching. On occasion, I have received roughly just enough to cover my expenses, but on only one or two occasions did I ever actually receive less than my cost. The thought surfaced. In the case of those rare occasions when I received less than my costs, had I known that fact in advance, would I have gone or stayed home? With no hesitation, I would have gone. Preaching the gospel is always more important than how much the preacher receives for his effort. Always. In the case of the Corinthian church, perhaps a few others, Paul deliberately declined to accept financial support from the churches, even though other churches gave to him while he served these churches. For Paul, the gospel was far more important than money. In the area where I grew up and began my ministry, at the time, many churches and individual members practiced a very odd habit in their giving. I fondly refer to their method as palming the preacher. During the handshake after preaching, as they shook hands with the preacher would sense a bill in the person's hand, so he'd take it, stuff it in the nearest pocket, and quickly reach out to shake the next person's hand. When most of the people in a congregation practiced this unusual way of giving, the preacher had to become a study in quick hand moment, shake, grab, pocket, shake, grab, pocket. And, no, I have yet to find anything remotely akin to this method of giving in the New Testament. Churches in different regions vary their giving practices widely. God bless them for giving. They would honor their faith if they spent some time studying the New Testament and learning a practice that generally complies with the New Testament model. Whatever the mechanics involved, the New Testament model teaches that the funds be given to the deacons in a systematic and habitual manner. Lord, convict and teach us to so honor the preaching of His gospel that we avoid the many hindrances and keep our hearts focused on the clear, sound, and simple preaching of the gospel for edification of hearers and for the glory of the Lord. Lord bless. Joe Holder. Willing service and a reward. Even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. But I have used none of these things, neither have I written these things, that it should be so done unto me, for it were better for me to die, than that any man should make my glorying void. For though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of, for necessity is laid upon me, yea, woe is unto me, if I preach not the gospel. For if I do this thing willingly, I have a reward, but if against my will, a dispensation of the gospel is committed unto me. What is my reward then? Verily that, when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, that I abuse not my power in the gospel. For though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more. 1 Corinthians 9:14-19 KJV 1900. Any believer, preacher, or otherwise, who tends to become prideful that they have attained a noble degree of obedience should memorize this lesson. Paul was an apostle. The Holy Spirit used him to write a significant portion of the New Testament. Yet in these words Paul indicates no stain of pride whatever. Contextually, Paul made a logical and biblical case for a church's financial support of its pastor. In the Old Testament, God designated that the 9 tribes give a tenth of their produce. They were primarily an agricultural society, for the support of the tribe of Levi who were the priestly tribe. There is no biblical basis for New Testament churches advocating or practicing tithing, unless they wish to abandon the New Testament and adopt Moses's law, all of it, not one isolated law as their rule of faith. Paul quite sufficiently taught a different basis for New Testament giving. Paul subsequently turns to his personal ministry. In some instances, he gratefully accepted financial support from churches, but, apparently, in the case of the Corinthian church, he did not. When he lacked funds, Paul never shamed a church for not giving. He made and sold tents for his needs. Paul didn't enter the ministry and become an apostle for financial reasons, but because the Lord called him to that work. He didn't preach at certain churches because they gave liberal funds to him. In fact, he preached and labored in some churches deliberately accepting no financial support at all. Apparently this practice included the Corinthian church. While Paul clearly felt a pastoral affection for this church, at least some of its members did not share a similar affection for him. The closing chapters of 2 Corinthians makes this point. For reasons not stated, based on our study passage, some of these people were so opposed to Paul that, had the church given him any financial aid, they would have likely accused Paul of preaching for money. Rather than allow his preaching and his gospel message to be so denigrated and misrepresented, Paul refused to accept financial support from this church. For though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of, for necessity is laid upon me, yea, woe is unto me, if I preach not the gospel. Despite preaching, knowing he would receive no financial support, Paul refused to allow any thought of merit or personal praise to cloud his Christ-centered, God-glorifying message. The necessity laid on Paul to preach was not that he could not possibly resist the Lord's calling. Within the context, he emphasizes that he preached willingly, not by a robotic decree. Occasionally, folks who lean toward fatalistic beliefs will claim that every man the Lord calls or appoints to preach shall preach. Supposedly, they cannot resist. Interesting, isn't it, that believers in every other area of the faith may or may not obey? To be clear, if the Lord wants a message to be preached to a certain people, and one man whom he calls to preach it refuses, the Lord can readily call someone more willing to deliver his message. When I first started preaching, I recall occasionally hearing preachers talk about their early experiences when they first felt the conviction to preach. Most of them described a deep sense of unworthiness and fear that made them reluctant to act on their convictions. Often these men would tell tales of fear and providence that eventually convinced them to obey. I was a young man and inexperienced in this preaching thing, so I understood the fearful responsibility quite well, but I could not understand the habit of almost boasting about their disobedience. I was profoundly blessed when I heard a preacher humbly describe his experience. When he felt the conviction to preach, someone asked him to open the service, speak briefly at the beginning of the preaching service, and he simply obeyed. Paul writes of this necessity that was laid on him to preach. The Lord didn't show Paul how financially appealing ministry could be, or what a great career choice it would be. Read Acts 9, especially the Lord's words to Paul, along with Paul's description of that experience in Acts 22 and Acts 26. Paul's necessity was a matter of faithful obedience. Mounds, Expository Dictionary, defines the Greek word translated necessity as obligation of duty, moral or spiritual necessity. If the Lord irresistibly decreed our obedience, there would be no logical or rational basis for a single such commandment in the Bible. Paul willingly responded to that sense of spiritual necessity or obligation. For if I do this thing willingly, I have a reward, but if against my will, a dispensation of the gospel is committed unto me. For if I... Paul affirms what the Corinthian church already knew, that he preached among them and refused to accept financial support while doing so. A carnal perception of preaching might be that the man preaches as a career choice, fully expecting to be paid for his work. While Paul had just affirmed that the Lord had ordained financial support for godly preachers of his gospel, he also leaves no doubt that he has chosen, in the case of the Corinthian church, not to accept their financial support for fear that their carnal attitude would wrongly accuse his motives and compromise the gospel he preached to them. Despite refusing a financial reward for his preaching, Paul nevertheless claimed a more valuable reward. Whatever we do in service to the Lord, Scripture teaches us to serve willingly. In this case, Paul affirms that his willing preaching, even when the carnality of his congregation wisely moved him to refuse their financial support, brought a reward to him from the Lord of far greater value than money. But if against my will, a dispensation of the gospel is committed unto me. Follow the language. Paul is not debating with himself whether or not he would preach, he preaches. His lesson focuses on the outcome of willing preaching versus the outcome of unwilling preaching for Paul. The logical implication of this sentence for Paul seems to be this. A. If he preached willingly, even when wise grace meant he refused financial support, he would receive a greater reward from the Lord than the value of any amount of money the church would give him. B. If he preached reluctantly, against my will, he still preached, but that greater reward from the Lord was lost. He would honor his dispensation, translated from a word that refers to stewardship, managing or using what belongs to another, but his unwilling disposition would void any reward. What is my reward then? Verily that, when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, that I abuse not my power in the gospel. For though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more. This passage not only teaches us that willing, godly obedience brings a temporal reward from the Lord, but it also stands apart from the many other reward passages in the Bible, in that it specifically identifies what that reward will be. I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, that I abuse not my power in the gospel. This was Paul's reward. Obviously, from this verse, for Paul, the fact that he was blessed to preach to people, and many heard, believed, and rejoiced in the Lord's revelation of his truth in that preaching, was the most glorious reward he could imagine. In the setting of carnally minded Corinthian Christians, Paul gladly waived expectation of financial support from this church. In fact, that he could so preach to these infant believers was, for Paul, his reward for so preaching. I have been preaching for 66 years. As I review my memory, I never kept records of financial support beyond what was necessary for tax reasons. I think of one, maybe two occasions when I traveled to a church some distance from my home and returned home with less than I left with in the beginning. In those few cases, there were quite likely extenuating circumstances. If I had known in advance that the host church would give me less money than the trip cost me, would I have gone anyway? Absolutely. No doubt whatever. Much of Paul's teaching in this lesson addresses the question of motive. Do you preach for the money you'll receive, or for other self-gain motives? Or do you preach to encourage, teach, and generally edify those who hear you? Any man who claims to be a preacher who fills the position for any personal gain or benefit is not worthy of the office. Paul invested months in the Corinthian church. The Lord guided him to that church, and blessed his labors there abundantly. Rather than make his wallet a condition or a hindrance to his preaching, Paul dusted off his tools and made and sold tents to support himself during his time in Corinth. In this conduct, Paul sets an example that many contemporary preachers consciously refuse to follow. If we keep Paul's reward in focus, contemporary mercenary preachers, or ego preachers, depending on their personal reasons for preaching, by their low motives for preaching, forfeit any reward from the Lord for preaching. It becomes a job, a career choice in which they invest their time for personal gain, financial or otherwise. That I abuse not my power in the gospel. Paul refused to regard his preaching the gospel as a form of personal entitlement. Just because you were ordained at some time in the past does not entitle you to pulpit time. How effectively, measured by whether you edify the congregation or not, do you use the time you have in the pulpit? Young preachers, never, ever, complain about not having enough time. Use every second you do have for edification. If you do that, you'll have more time. Paul didn't preach for Paul, he preached for Jesus. In one way or another, I believe I have witnessed on occasion the Lord quietly removing a man who approached the ministry with bad motives. Preachers, the Lord called us to honor him by edifying his people. Never take your eye off that goal. Never. Elder Joe Holder.